RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show 137 with guest Bhargav Shukla, recorded Monday, November 30th, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, Richard. Hey, everybody.
And a happy Thanksgiving to you, my friend.
Likewise. Well, yours was a month earlier, but yep, I'm just getting over the turkey coma.
Yeah.
It was a good Thanksgiving.
Us Canadians do our Thanksgivings in October, so we're already done for a while.
I have no idea how or why that works the way it works, but it does.
I'm sure it's complicated. On the upside, I get to go down and visit with the American family in November and get another turkey.
So you basically get to stretch your stomach the first time around, and then you get to like really dive in.
It's all about the practice, my friend. All about the practice.
Right. Well, you know, when you come to America, it's all about the excess.
Right? Yes.
So, yeah.
Let's get right to our guest.
All right.
Bhargav Shukla is a premier field engineer for Microsoft, our favorite people. Fascinated by computers, he was educated as a civil engineer, but his passion is in IT and made him focus on what he does today. He's had 14 years of experience working on a multitude of technologies, including messaging, directory services, information security, virtualization, and more. As he progressed through his career, he earned industry certifications for Microsoft, VMware, RSA, and Citrix. And when he's not working with enterprise clients in his PFE role, he contributes to the TechNet forums and blogs about Exchange at www.bhargavs, that's bhargavs.com. Welcome, Bhargav.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
So PFE folks are my favorite folks in the world. It feels like you guys do real work. How's the acceptance level of Exchange 2010?
I'd say there is a lot of buzz about Exchange 2010, especially in the circles where they are at Exchange 2003, and they were either planning to go to 2007 sometime in very near future, or were in the process of migrating to 2007. Especially as everybody can guess, 2010 is new, it's out, and yeah, they're thinking, should we really go to 2010 or not? The acceptance level, again, to answer your question, is I do see quite a bit of enterprise clients seriously thinking about deploying 2010 in their environment. Either that be a migration from 2007 or skipping from 2003 directly to 2010.
Well, and you're totally speaking to me because I'm running a 2003 Exchange server myself and have been contemplating moving to 2007 for a while. Really going virtualized on the whole thing. And now with 2010 coming out, I'm thinking I might as well just jump right to that one. And just to lay it on the table, is that a painful thing? Do I have to go through 2007 to get to 2010?
No, absolutely not. So if you're on 2003 and you never made a leap to 2007, we'll make a bigger leap now to 2010. And we'll definitely discuss reasons for that. But, you know, one obvious reason is the new product is supported for a longer period than the previous one, obviously. So at some point in the lifetime of 2007, you will end up upgrading to 2010 anyway. So save the time, save the effort, go to 2010. It definitely has its benefits. You know, new features that you would benefit from. And the support. So you would have longer time to think about the newer version when it comes out and you want to evaluate and go to it.
So before we talk about maybe an upgrade and whether we're going from 2003 or 2007, what are your top three reasons why I should care about 2010 at all? I mean, what is it about Exchange 2010 that makes using it, even if it's a brand new deployment, what is it that makes it so great?
Okay. Well, if you break it down, administration, high availability, storage, and remote access. So you asked for three, I'll give you four.
Fair enough.
but there are a lot of differences in 2010, even from 2007, if you talk storage, the storage is completely redesigned. The way Exchange writes to the disk, the way Exchange handles the I/O, and the amount of I/O required. You know, the bottom line for most of the Exchange environment, especially as you mentioned, you're on 2003. If you think about that, the I/O was one of the biggest concern whenever anyone designed Exchange environment. In 2010, the I/O, like I said, in the storage is redesigned. It's done differently, and because of that, the I/O demand on your disk subsystem is from 2003, it's around 90% less, and from 2007, it's around 70% less.
Wow, how is that even possible? That's a tremendous decrease in disk traffic.
So, if you think about the I/O in the previous versions in 2007 and 2003, the I/O was random. And in 2010, it's designed to be written in one large serial I/O. So when Exchange writes to the disk, it basically coalesces the pages in the memory and then writes one larger serial I/O on the disk instead of doing a couple of shorter bursts to the disk for the pages as they come in.
So then the trade-off for serial transactioning like that makes me worried that there's concerns around transactional integrity, that we're not keeping up with the rate of mail coming into the Exchange server.
Well, so you had to remember the different levels where Exchange is accepting mails. And so your mail is coming in from Hub. And if you're really worried about the mailbox server, which is really doing the I/O to the disk, the architecture is 64-bit now. So you're going to scale your server according to your number of mailboxes you're going to have, according to the profiles you're going to have, if it is, you know, smaller mailboxes, larger mailboxes, how much I/O your users are doing, whether you have the heavy profile users who are really hitting the server hard. And based on that, especially since it's 64-bit, you would have less of the resource issue if the server is sized properly.
And it's much more common now. I guess this is really a scaling thing. I've only ever dealt with Exchange Server as a standalone box. But when you get into bigger systems, it's many servers, right? You've got front-end servers and mailbox stores and so forth. Can you give us a feel for the numbers that are involved here? How many mailboxes before I start distributing and the rate of traffic? What have you encountered there?
Well, so for the majority of my work goes into the enterprise space. And obviously there we see the deployments that are tiered. So you have the mailbox servers. And when we're talking Exchange 2010, and even folks who are on 2007 recognize some of this terminology, which is you have the mailbox servers, then you have your hub transport servers, which in 2003 you can relate it to the bridgehead servers, which is basically handling your mail flow. And then you have the client access servers, which you can relate to OWA in 2003, which is serving the clients. So the number of machines that you need, it depends a lot on how you're going to plan your environment, whether it's consolidated data centers, you know, one or two data centers across different locations serving the entire community, whether it's, you know, location-based or location-less, which is Salesforce and the mobile users. And then some companies choose to deploy, especially going to 2007 or 2010, they prefer the consolidated scenario because it helps a lot when you think about high availability, site resiliency, even in the DR scenarios. And the number of users that the Exchange server can host is also dependent on your configuration, but it can scale pretty good.
I'd like to do a little sidebar. You just mentioned location-less workers, and I know that I've had to deal with that type of you could either think of it as a problem or as an opportunity, really. I think that it would be interesting to hear what you have to say about Exchange and what it can do. And what I hear you saying is there's some different topology or different architecture you might do for, depending on whether everybody's in one location or if you have a widely distributed workforce. What do you think about when you think about location-less type of users?
Well, so what I meant was that regardless of you have, you know, all users mobile or some users mobile or a major concentration of users in one place, you can go one way or the other. You can go consolidated model with most of your servers hosted in a data center and then the secondary data center providing you the resiliency.
Right.
So it's not necessarily whether the users are mobile or not. However, the Exchange 2010 does provide benefits for the mobile workforce. So if you have, say, a company that is more or less the location-less workers, a lot of Salesforce people or a lot of people out in the field, not necessarily right. going to the office as often, then the changes like the benefits of new Outlook Web Access, which is fully featured client access using Windows mobile phones, and you know other changes like SMS sync, instant messaging integration. It provides you a feature improvements and that helps boost the productivity of the mobile workers.
Have there been any changes in the 2010 version related to unified messaging?
Yes, there are. So 2010 does have changes in unified messaging. One of the biggest change, I would say, is when you receive the voicemail, if you have experience with that in the previous versions, you would just receive an attachment and you would listen to
right.
it. Well, in 2010, what they have done is you would receive the voicemail. It will also be transcribed. So when you receive it, you will have an attachment, but your body of the message, the email, will contain the text that's transcribed from your voicemail. So you could just read even without downloading the attachment, especially if you think about mobile workers. I'm on the road. I don't have the bandwidth or the connection that's required to download the message. But I got the message already. It has the text. I can just read it and see what the message is about.
That's amazing. What does the speech-to-text translation?
Yeah, the speech-to-text translation, it's with the new unified messaging in 2010, we have seen about 73% accuracy.
So it's enough to get a feel for the message at least.
Right. So I have been on that for quite a while now, and for most of my messages, it has been transcribing successfully. And I said most of it because obviously you have to account for the noise in the line, you have to account for
sure.
the quality of the voice, you have to account for different languages and accents. Given that, 73% accuracy is pretty good.
Well, I also find when you're talking technology, I mean, how many of your voicemails are a conversation about some specific technology and full of acronyms, and most of those kinds of conversion tools really struggle there.
Right. Agree.
I know my phone service provider provides voicemail transcription automated like that, and it's really useful. But I'll tell you, every now and then you get an email with a transcription in it, and your eyes just have to get really big and you try to wonder what just happened. but when it works, it works really well.
Right. And like I said, you know, for the most part, it works really well. And then from time to time, you will get some transcription that it would just not understand. And when you're
right.
reading it, you would be like looking at what is this text and if it even makes sense in a sentence.
So I've dragged us off track a little bit, Richard. Sorry about that. But maybe we should jump back into, you know, what does it mean to migrate, you know, in the details, in the trenches from 2003 and from 2007 to Exchange 2010.
So, Bhargav, anything different going from 2003 or going from 2007?
So, yes, in 2003, and the reason you see slower adoption rate of 2007 is because from 2003 to 2007, there was a big difference. One biggest difference was you were going from 32-bit to 64-bit.
Right.
the architecture was different, new roles were introduced, and that all made it slower, not necessarily difficult if you knew what you were doing, but slower because you had to learn all the changes. You had to go from that to the new version. You had to acquire new hardware. You had to configure the roles, size the hardware, and then implement it. And that made it slower overall as an adoption of 2007. Now, in 2010, going from 2007, the roles are pretty much the same, but the balance is different. For an example, if you were in 2007, you required X amount of CAS servers per mailbox server, or sorry, I should say a CAS server for X amount of mailbox servers.
Right.
In 2010, it's a little bit different. Now, the CAS servers, the client access servers, do more work. All your client traffic is hitting the client access servers, and then client access servers talk to the mailbox servers as necessary to bring your mails to the client and whatnot. So there is a little bit of difference there in the balance of how the servers are required, how many servers you need for a given role. But besides that, 2007 to 2010, your roles remain same. There is a client access server role, there is a hub server role, there is a mailbox server role, there is an edge transport role, and if you're a unified messaging shop, there is the unified messaging role. But from 2003, whether you're going to 2007 or 2010, the roles do not change. The roles are same. Like I said, the balance changes how many servers you need, how many mailbox servers you need, how much storage you need for your users, how many client access servers you will need is different. Okay. Now, obviously, the features are quite a bit different. Exchange 2010 provides new features, advantages of those features as you have. And there are some changes on how applications will access your mailboxes. For an example, if we talk about BlackBerry always, since 2003, even in 2003, 2007, it accessed the mailboxes directly by connecting to the mailbox server. In 2010, the RPC service is now on client access server. So your application would make a connection using the Exchange Web Services, not using the MAPI. You would connect to your client access server, and then the client access server will then talk to mailbox server.
Are you running a separate BlackBerry interface there, or is it just built into Exchange now?
Well, so the BlackBerry versions that are out there currently are not compatible with 2010. They are planning to release the Exchange 2010 version as per the announcement, 30 days from the launch.
Right.
It should be sometime soon.
So, but there is a way for BlackBerrys to get into Exchange without that additional software.
In 2010, I'm afraid not. If you were going to make a jump to 2010 without waiting for that new version of BlackBerry server software to come out, you will not be able to connect your mailboxes on Exchange 2010.
Yeah, okay. That's an important thing to know. People love their BlackBerrys.
Correct. Yeah. And that's a very important thing to know. There are places that I'm aware of, they have made a leap to Exchange 2010, and the community that suffers the most is the community that is running BlackBerrys. And most of them, if you think about it, are your executives, your CIOs, CEOs,
right.
and most important people. Well, they are the ones who are not reaping the benefit of going to 2010 right now, even though if you think about it, they are the ones who gave you all the resources you need to go there.
Well, that's one of your critical due diligence things, everybody, is, make sure if you have anything that's touching Exchange that it will work when you make the change.
It definitely is. And to that point, like you said, everything that touches Exchange, you have to remember your custom applications, you have to remember business logic, you have to remember any applications that you have designed to either work with SMTP just to send email, or the applications like SharePoint, where you have your own portal and you have custom logic that's connecting to user's mailbox. So when they go to the portal, it shows them the appointments, for an example. Well, when you go there, make sure that your code is compliant with the Exchange Web Services and it's connecting to correct servers to make the calls, get the response, and be able to function properly.
Right.
All right. We've talked about migrating from 2007. How different is the situation with 2003? Is that same pain that they had to, that 2003 folks had going to 2007?
So, yes. The answer is yes, in short, because you have to go either to 2007 or 2010. You will be going off of your 32-bit hardware. You would be investing into the new hardware or leapfrogging if your hardware is recent enough to host the 64-bit operating system and the software for Exchange, which is also 64-bit. You will be leapfrogging. So one way or the other, you will basically be going to new set of servers. Either it's, you know, either it's the new set of hardware or the leapfrog method,
right,
going to the new. But yes, you will be going through the same process as if you were going to 2007. You would basically implement the client access role, hub transport role, and then the mailbox server role. You will migrate your users after 2010.
Is there anything about going directly to 2010? If I'm an Exchange 2003 user now, other than feature functionality, is there anything about Exchange 2010 from a migration standpoint that makes it easier at all?
So for the, from the process perspective, it is pretty much the same. I would say when you're going to 2007 or 2010, the process is pretty much the same. You have to implement the new roles. You have to start cutting off your previous version of software. So when, say, if we take the step one of client access server role, then it is your web access. You have to switch your web access to your client access role. Then you take the next step of hub transport and mail flow, switch the mail flow. And the process, again, like I said, is pretty much the same.
You know, another question that comes up that I hear periodically is, how do I get off of this notes server, you know, IBM Lotus Notes type of email and collaboration system, and move over to Exchange? Is there anything in 2010 to assist with that that's different than, you know, what I might do in 2007 or otherwise? And it might even be worthwhile, regardless of what the answer is to just sort of talk briefly about what is the process of moving from a notes type system over to Exchange.
So if you're talking Exchange 2010 and notes, no, Exchange 2010 does not have a way like the previous versions to go directly from notes to Exchange 2010. So basically you will have to either rely on the partner solutions, which will allow you to leap directly from notes to 2010, or use previous version, go from notes to the previous version, and then migrate the previous version to 2010.
Oh, okay.
Bhargav, would I ever end up with a logical reason to be in a hybrid situation where maybe I just move my CAS servers over to 2010 and leave the mailbox store back at 2003 or 2007?
Well, so there is version compatibility, which you have to keep in mind. If your mailbox server is 2010, or if you plan to have your users on Exchange 2010 mailbox server, you have to have Exchange 2010 hub transport servers in the set of client access servers. You could have the hybrid environment where you have some users on 2010, some users on 2007, and some users on 2003, but the version dependency is still there, so you have to have a set of all servers. So you have to have the client access role, hub transport role, and mailbox server role installed. Now, it doesn't mean you have to have three different servers depending on your environment. You could end up having one server running all the roles, which is possible in 2010. You can run the client access, hub transport, and mailbox on the same role. But the version routing, for an example, if you have 2007 server on the mailbox users and 2010 server hosting some mailbox users, the mailbox server talks to hub transport server, but the 2007 hub transport cannot deliver mail directly to 2010 mailbox, and same the other way around.
Well, and you said this, the progression is client access, then hub transport, then mailbox.
That's correct.
So to me, it sounds like I could run client access in 2010 and leave the others in 2007, and it would work. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it does work.
And so your question is whether if you have the 2010 client access, would you be able to connect to 2007 mailbox servers?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And it would just, that should just work fine. What you can't do is put a 2010 mailbox server up and expect the 2007 hub transports to work properly with it.
Right.
No, it just won't work. So you have to have the correct, if you implement a mailbox server running Exchange 2010 and you don't have a hub transfer server with the Exchange 2010 running, it just won't be able to send or receive emails.
Yeah, and people might notice that.
No right. Big deal.
I think one of the big jumps for 2010 that people are really waxing poetic about is the latest version of Outlook Web Access, although apparently we're not allowed to call it that anymore, right?
It's Outlook Web App now.
Okay.
It's still OWA. It's still OWA.
Yeah, it's still OWA. They just, yeah, changed the words in the acronym.
Yep. And you might have noticed with Office 2010, there is the web app, which is basically if you have a document stored on your SharePoint, for an example, you just click on the document and that's going to open right in your Internet Explorer. You don't need to have Word or Excel installed
right.
on your machine. So I guess going with that in line with the Outlook web app.
The idea that it is an entire application that's web-based. As opposed to that client that gets called. That kind of makes
Correct.
Sense.
Correct. And actually, if you think about it, the Outlook Web App and Outlook Web Access, you know, it has come a long way from previously being able to just access your mail online. Now, it is pretty much a full-featured Outlook client if you think about what it can do now with the newer versions. Even in 2007, you might have noticed that difference. And then in 2010, it's definitely quite a bit of difference. Multiple browser support, single page messages, and conversation view. So if you're on an email chain, you don't have to go find your previous thread to do the reference. It's all in a conversation view. And that's all web-based, so you don't even have to have your Outlook 2010 to see the conversation view.
Well, Bhargav, anything we've missed in the whole deployment of 2010 here?
So in terms of a certain role, or are you thinking about the way it works now in terms of, there are quite a few things that we have to keep in mind, obviously, so I'm not sure what you're referring to, but if you think about permissions, for an example, there is a new role-based access model now in Exchange 2010.
Right.
So when you're assigning permissions, for an example, in 2007 or 2003, you were to give the permissions based on delegation and Active Directory permissions. In 2010, now it is role-based access control. So what you're doing is you're creating the roles, and you can go granular as much as you want. You can go to the point where you can mention a user, can edit their, for an example, Office phone number if that changes. If you remember, in the previous versions, it was very difficult to do that because basically that's not Exchange, that's Active Directory.
Right.
And you have to go in Active Directory. You have to give users permission in Active Directory. With RBAC, you don't have to. With role-based access control, you're creating the roles and defining precisely what a group of users be able to do, whether it's users, whether it's help desk staff, whether it's second and third level Exchange administrators who are troubleshooting at certain level in
right.
Exchange and they need to have access to certain features. Because how it works now is that the RBAC decides what you can do as a user when you log on to your management console or using the shell, and then it actually does the work on your behalf. So once you have ability to execute certain command, it will execute it for you.
Now, just to be clear here, in the phone number scenario you just described, in 2010, we're still storing that phone number in Active Directory, but RBAC is providing the front end to doing that Active Directory update?
That is correct. So okay. The information is still stored in Active Directory. That's not changed. None of that has changed. What has changed, though, is how you go about assigning permissions.
Right.
How you're able to manage that from the back end so Exchange can make the updates to the Active Directory.
Okay. And so the big thing from my perspective then is that Exchange is taking responsibility for the interface to Active Directory.
Correct.
Okay. I mean, that's a pretty compelling point because it's always been a struggle going back and forth with Active Directory.
Right. And when you're talking about struggle, we briefly talked about the mobile workforce. Well, it's not always necessary that your administrators are in the office where the Exchange servers are either. So there is another benefit in 2010, and that is using Exchange Control Panel. So if you log on to Outlook Web Access, Outlook Web App, I should say, is you will notice a difference when you go to Options. You will be able to manage yourself, and if you have proper permissions, you'll be able to manage your organization. Not necessarily everything you can do using the shell, but a lot of tasks you will be able to do using the Exchange Control Panel over the web.
That's pretty cool. So that's why they call it Outlook Web App.
Correct.
It's not just about managing your mail anymore.
Right. And that's why, as we discussed earlier, you know, it's not necessarily accessing your mail anymore. Using the Outlook Web App, now you're doing quite a few things.
Well, Bhargav, I think we're about out of time. Any final words, places people should look if they want to get more involved with 2010?
Yes, I would highly recommend you go to TechNet, in the TechNet Tech Center for Exchange 2010. It's redesigned. It has lots and lots of information there. I always recommend also that you check out the TechNet webcasts. There are quite a few webcasts. MS Exchange Team blog, which has a wealth of information, and the help for Exchange 2010, which is also there. It's a work in progress as always, and it always is updated with the latest information as it comes along. So if you're planning to go to 2010, or if you just want to learn about 2010, what's new, how to go from 2003 to 2010, or how to go from 2007 to 2010, what to watch out for, what are the gotchas, what are the new functionality that could break or enhance the, you know, what you're trying to do, how it can make your disaster recovery better. It's all out there. TechNet is, you know, anytime I have to refer something, I always go there first before going anywhere else.
Very cool.
Bhargav Shukla, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.